This is Jan Cox, talk number 915, recorded on January 1st, 1992.
And Kyrud said, "Ordinary men can't really tell what's best to do in life. That's why they talk about it."
In one city, a private college's secret motto was, "If chocolate bars get together, can nuts be far behind?"
And Kyrut noted, "When push comes to Thursday, the final bell rung and the last strike called, everyone proves to be a shill for themselves."
In the ordinary world, they can discuss indefinitely whether or not you can ever go back home or not. But a real revolutionist wouldn't even if he could. And especially if he wanted to.
And Kyrut said, "On special holidays, this one king would let everyone out of prison to be shot, then chopped up, then burned, and thrown over a cliff." "I didn't get to be king," says his grace, "by having idiots for genes." One man's synapses held onto and guarded the pass with all their might.
Cosmology for the day. All undiscovered planets are in your head.
And Kyrut said, "As was their Saturday habit, one father and son team went downtown to watch keys being made." And on the return home, the lad asked for his weekly advice, which his pater delivered as follows. "A wise man in a septic tank may still know something worthwhile, but you won't be able to prove it by me." The kid recognized a sound suggestion when he heard it.
And Kyrut said, "Thoughts come in all necessary sizes."
And Kyrut said, "On the day most stores closed, one man stayed open for me to walk in and for him to tell me that he finally came to understand that the facts are never permanent, when he realized why life gave each of the days in the week a different name rather than the same one."
Once they were all inside the fort and the gate closed, the adjunct told them, "In here, anyone with a serious name has a potential problem." "Say now," one guy once noted, "you know, my mind won't do anything unless I speak to it. Say now."
And Kyrut said, "What sold one man on the new cult was their unconditional claim that there'll be no whiteout in heaven."
And Kyrut said, "One chap attempting to track his own particular non-city muse once thought, no passing passion is of any consequence save stupidity awareness. Only the few will hold to that which is useful to them, because things that are only useful to a few." Dealers and jobbers note, in some territories, it's hard to peddle parables that lack a certain symmetry and balance. Only a non-local mind will juggle and enjoy unexpected and ungainly objects.
In a place not exactly here and not exactly now, came a man who claimed to be an ex-member of a certain rebel's forces. And when the latter was asked if this self-proclaimed student of his now speaks for him, the revolutionist replied, "Hell, under these present conditions, half the time I don't even speak for me."
In his regular report, one local god mentioned to his reality a group of indigenous rebels and noted that in his opinion, not only was their activity new, but perhaps too new. All good door-to-door salesmen must protect their territory. Why else do you think your mind so recoils from new ideas?
Standing on a small temporary uprising, the speaker over in City Park proclaimed, "Those who will not, I say, those who will not resign themselves to the will of life will never, I say, will never hear my words." And a man with half a sandwich in the crowd thought, "Yes, the non-existent usually miss darn near everything."
And Kairut said, "In matters of aggression, defense, and self-promotion, man's secondary world backs up its snarl with another snarl."
And Kairut said, "The justice of it all revisited yet again. A man who believes that the basis of all human problems are physical can get elected to office, but then is too intellectually limited to do much of anything other than cut a few ribbons and come in out of a thunderstorm." And a viewer writes, "Dear Kairut, what if that little comment you just made actually had something to do with how an individual man's nervous system operates at the brainstem level and not with politics or anything else out in life? What if, Mr. Kairut?" What if indeedo?
And Kairut said, "There is one chap who has attempted to increase his perception of the world through a fresh verbal expansion of certain older ideas. Much ado about something, and big things mean even more than a lot, and even greater expectations."
And Kairut said, "Only guesswork is inspiring to the ordinary mind."
And Kairut said, "After the meal, he cracked open what he called his unfortunate cookie to find this message. Around these parts, Buster, the only substitute for intelligence is charm." He got the message. "Oh, as long as we're here," Kairut added, "you may as well note that around most places in the past, there's some sort of substitute for intelligence. I do trust you're the type who doesn't need to benefit from such info."
The guy flexed his fingers, stretched his hamstrings, buffed his biceps, and tensed his temples, then looked deep into his baby blues and said, "My game is mental hardball." Undaunted, he accepted the challenge and died. The end.
And Kairut said, "On that one special occasion, the sky above their planet lit up with a message that read, 'There may be more than one way to run a world, but as long as you're on one of them, you'll never know what they are.'" The commissioner of floodplains said he didn't even want to consider the possible personal implications of such a notion.
Then there was this other guy who would comfort himself by saying to himself, "There, there, now I surely want to be there when it happens."
And Kairut offered this multiple choice quiz. A. Just because hormones call is no proof you have to answer. B. When hormones call, everybody answers. Or C. I don't understand what this is all about. Yes, that's right, contestants, studio audience, boys and girls, boats and planes, planets, and most visible galaxies. The correct answer to all questions around these parts is always C. See?
The council one old man gave the kid as he headed off for the city. Don't ever let him know what you really eat.
And Dr. Kyrut said, under routine conditions, the apparent center and core of one's intellectual operations is an ad hoc affair. Swallow two more opinions and call somebody else in the morning.
And Kyrut said, after some study, reflection, deep thought, and other miscellaneous mullings, one man mused to his old self, well, if life is not really my friend, but on the other hand is not actually my enemy either, then what the hell am I thinking about anyway?
One ancient people used their Colosseum for the public display of their individual faults and weaknesses. Hey, what are friends for?
One old guy in the city says he's saved himself a bundle of time since deciding that anybody who wants me to read about them ain't worth reading about.
And Kyrut said, in one land where the people all lived by the directive that those who love life practice humility, the king, in his own private pursuit, substituted for humility the word awareness.
And Kyrut said, without turning his head to look back, the man in the seat in front of me handed me this note, which said, I trust no machines that don't make noise. As he got off at the next stop, several people noticed the whirring sound coming from beneath his hat. Driver, driver, it's me again. Been on this bus since I don't know when. But I don't mind, no sir, not a bit. I believe my seat's a custom fit.
Son of cosmology of the day. You do not exist in a linear universe unless that is your perception, and even then you don't.
Meeting in the blind alley beside the deserted building, the gang leader told the guys, when only smartasses know the truth shall be smartassed. And a passing rat thought, how far behind the times is it possible for humans to be and still function sufficiently to get into parables such as this? Assuming, of course, that this is such a tale.
At the dinner table, the old man said to the assembled, anything you actually know, you made up. And his 30-year-old son replied, in that case, I don't actually know anything. And the old man said, I'm not surprised.
And Kyrut said, no matter how outrageous, the opposite is always comparably correct.
In a certain building, over in a certain city doctor thought, I sometimes suspect, disregarding physical birth deformities, that everyone would be pretty intelligent if it weren't for their attitude. After thinking this, and being on one of the upper floors and all, he decided not to take any further chances.
And Kyrut said, most people are pretty much as they are.
A correspondent speculates, How can we not be confident of life's good health so long as we humans will pay more for imitation ice cream than for the real thing? He admits that the only reason he wrote to us about this was to keep from having to think about how this might apply to what men believe to be true and perhaps go to pieces thereover himself.
The voice reassured one and all. As long as you're one and all, you have nothing to worry about, because as long as you're one and all, worry won't do you a bit of good. Now, back to those carts, and I'll meet you on aisle 7.
And Kairut said, don't be overly impressed by the stories of certain deposed powers rebounding with renewed aggression. For if it proves possible to return, everyone will return with a vengeance.
One guy's private and personal message to his own self was mainly contained in these words. Hey, babe, don't go sensitive on me now.
And Kairut said, some of those who got there after things had already started seemed unusually impressed. After that, life saw to it that everyone arrived a little late.
Reality is the only being who can actually live and learn.
And Kairut said, in man's secondary intellectual world, there are two possible classes of experts. The normal, recognized city ones, and then a few who might actually know what's going on.
And Kairut said, one Tuesday, when it was reported that the ozone layer was completely out of town, one of the regular park philosophers took to the stand and said, when the day comes that I understand what I have been telling you people, is the day you shall see me no more. On Wednesday, everything was back to normal.
And Kairut said, visible failures can be more complex successes. Such are some of the unexpected intrigues of a finite land.
At the final formation of the day, the rebel drill sergeant told the troops, to a revolutionist mind, new info is like a rich, naked woman with a bottle of Jack Daniels. I put it to you this way for the sake of brevity. You go off and make up your own version. Dismissed.
And Kairut said, by age 30, deciding to save himself any further worry and bother, one man concluded, if life wanted me to know what was going on, it'd tell me. So there, yeah.
And Kairut said, while revising his will, one chap said to his attorney that he'd lost his joie de vivre at a pretty early age when he discovered that even on national holidays, 5 o'clock in the morning still came at the same time. Human interest story from the last page in the B section. A certain reformed old sorehead told a reporter, where disappointment reigns, my brothers in arms will be well cupped.
Ah, but yes, notes an alert viewer, due to the intrinsic, nay, Inescapable justice in a finite world, there are no lands with raincoats without inclement weather. This chap has a brother who started to say that his sibling had the whole idea backwards, then realized that such a thing is impossible in a true world of discernible corners and horizons.
And Kairut said, one guy had a set of little funky exercises he'd do every morning, at least until the day he died. After that, he said, what's the use?
And Kairut said, for the truly active rebel, the supremely satisfying fallback position is no position at all.
And Professor Kairut noted, once the immediate battle is over and the prince still standing is king, debate is suspended for some time regarding the fairness of his tactics. Thus, under other conditions, don't you wish, are human ideas allowed a certain time of life. Once you understand this, you realize why a neural revolutionist is called a revolutionist. Yeah, I guess you think I just made the term up for your benefit.
And Kairut said, as a prize for besting the old man at their game, the kid got to ask him any question he wanted, which turned out to be this. Why are there always more people at the airport than are actually going anywhere? And his papa replied, well, have you ever counted heads over at the city college and temple?
One old man didn't have a kid, so he made one up. Worked out fine.
And Kairut said, on ordinary neural landscapes, it's impossible to have a clear view without a perspective. And that is exactly what the rebel mind is after.
I'm your school of what you call it. This is WPI. Now the light's on. As regards how, further, how man's ordinary intellectual force is activated, is driven by that which is coming from a collective pool, and how, what we were calling collective thought, and how his many fine, excellent, splendid, and sometimes mystical dreams are actually concerned with the possibility of it being otherwise. I know it's not what it's called, and you know it's not what it's called. But that's what it is. So consider in a quite valid way, from a revolutionist view, drawing upon the Kairut, one of them of tonight, it is a quite valid view to say that anything a non-routine person knows, the anything they really know, they made up. I guess we can be safe enough to admit that that would probably sound, what, foolish to ordinary people. But as much as I know we all hate, and some of you even abhor, which I don't like to consider, adjectives, to distinguish, we should say that that which a person really knows, and for those of you who are sick of that since I used it just a minute ago, actually knows. They made up. Rather than leave, oh hell, that's late. I'm just trying to consider that. Consider it further. Get ready. Hold your chins, and here we go. I don't guess it's necessary, is it, for me to back up again and point out how ridiculous that is to say anything that a person, here we go, really knows. Not ordinary people now. We're past that. We've spent the last few weeks talking about ordinary operations of how the mind draws from this collective source. But now I want you to consider that man has forever been driven by life to dream otherwise. He calls it everything from getting out of Cleveland to going to heaven. But it's all the same thing. It's the nervous system. It's the nervous system dreaming of it operating at this level where it thinks. Of operating on fuel, being driven by that, which is not drawn from the collective pool. That's what it is. From there, it was a short step to say that anything a person really knows on that basis now, that anything a person, not humanity, not some collection of people, anything a person, a non-routine person at that, anything that they know, they made up. I was going to help ease the trauma of using self-rising flower in this, was to use history, because history always lends itself to more expansive hand gestures, because you can say history. But if you're just talking about individual people, you're more inclined to kind of go, well, you know how it is. I've seen some of you talk, and not all of you are even Italian. But history. If you doubt that, I would point out to you that such has been the case throughout history. And let's just take the ordinary run-of-the-mill heroes as they're known, and there's some that are even better, worse. That is, there's some that are more indicative, but since you never heard of them, they're indicative of what? The Buddhas, the Moseses. Have you ever noticed how many of the famous so-called mystics and such in life that the Western world English version of their name ends in an S, so that you gotta, when you try to pluralize, you gotta say the Moseses and make you look silly, the Jesuses, that kind of, the Confuciuses. I don't know, it's some sort of, I hate to believe in a conspiracy. Could I suggest to you, back to the fact, let's just pick out somebody like Buddha. He has taken in many quarters not only be a would-be mystical leader, an accepted mystical religious leader, but also a great thinker. May I suggest to you that these people, not limited to him, but that these people that seem to have been benchmarks in the evolution of man, your forefathers would have probably said the spiritual evolution or the cultural evolution. It's always the same. It's this expanding. So it's the intellectual evolution. That such men, may I point out to you, didn't so much actually present new info so much as they did, they made up some new. Would anybody care to argue that point? Would anybody care to arm wrestle? May I suggest, I'll back up a little, I was trying to pick out an example that some of you might, if you can't personally get involved with, you surely have read enough to know and pick out all the other great historical figures. Science becomes another matter. I could use science, but this seems to be the kind of area that most people are more easily bruised, and you can listen fast about me having to drag into the world. Science is, in fact, a better example because it is even more secondary. But back to that, these people, the Muhammads, Confucius, normally in the past, as you know, under the cloak of some kind of religious activity, that they have been enlightened, that they got touched by some kind of connection with great cosmic forces, and they had a greater insight into life. They reveal things of supreme importance. May I suggest to you, all right, screw suggestion, may I point out to you that they didn't so much present new information as they did make up some. If you care to look at it another way, how about this? Since that is probably even a compounding of the foolishness of starting out saying that that which an individual really knows, if it's something they really know, they had to make it up. It's this latter part of expanding it into the great world of not just slow walkers like you, but these big-time people like Confucius and Vishnu and Upu and those others. Look at it this way. Another view. That men out there, those who dream, those who write, those who attempt to start all kinds of activities or go off on these personal quests of their own, they're not actually seeking any sort of new information. Although they say they are. All you got to do is check your own nervous system. What they're seeking is a retelling, a revised retelling, if you want it really hip and up to date, wherever you are, is a revised retelling of the old stories. For you biblical scholars, allegorically speaking, men are actually seeking Ezekiel's and Daniel's, not Moses. And yet they both, what I've tried to get you to consider in the last couple of minutes, they, as always, coexist. That is, that those who apparently have some great impact, those who apparently have some kind of new information, that at least after the fact, because as I'm sure all of you know, Buddha is much more popular now than he was sometime in the past, shall we say, especially when he was alive. Same with the rest of those dudes. It's, thus has it always been, as Buddha used to say. It was either Buddha or Justin Wilson. I always confuse the two since Justin put on weight. But let's get serious. Pick out your own. Without, as you know, without us in any way making light in a useful sense of these past figures, but whoever struck you, and I just picked out the better known, but somebody in the past, and the ones I picked out are actually the better examples because they have had at the street level, at city level, a wider impact than some small philosopher, some little nutcase that you found that wrote a book some years ago. If you take the Buddhas and the Moseses and the Jesuses and the Muhammadses, that's right, he's safe, the Mohammeds. If you look upon them just in some attempt, a kind of objective view that this person not only had some sort of cultural and nowadays considered religious impact through the kind of verbiage and pictures they were using, if you can see in a certain way, there is no doubt. Even those that apparently were absolutely religious, according to history, let's just take history as a Moses, that all the words remembered by him were just as religious as you could ask for. Talking about guides and all kinds of stuff. And yet, if you look at it a certain way, it was apparently new information. Now, it was under what appeared to be a religious guise of him saying, wait a minute, I have new information. God has been talking to me personally. Individually, he has talked to me, and I have. And you people will be thankful that you know me. And they went, because I know something that you don't. So it's always a matter, even if it appears to be under that kind of umbrella of religiosity, it is always on the basis of new information, even if it's just new information that apparently to make you feel bad, that you people are, you know, even doing worse than you imagined. And they go, say, tell us. Things are even worse than you thought. Praise be, tell us. At any rate, you can surely see by now, no matter what it becomes translated as being in the external world, especially after the fact, it is always on the basis of new information. They can call it revelations and etc., but it's new information. Now, think back in your own nervous system, combination of your own nervous system and history, and by now some of you know, should know, which is the more reliable of the two. It's always number C. This information, just think back right quick. You don't have to be an expert. Just what little you've picked up from hanging around churches and going to bingo games if you're Catholic. Just some little something that you picked up. This information, think about it. You should be able to hear what I'm saying. Rather than it being some kind of new information that they brought, it was more a matter that they weren't bringing new information. They were presenting stuff that they made up. I haven't said it tonight, so I'll say it. Once you get a glimpse of that, it sure will explain a lot. Not from some ordinary view, not in some way to help justify the fact that you no longer play bingo or go to church or confession. I'm not talking about that. What I mean, it begins to explain why, with a certain kind of spin that we won't stop going to, that this kind of so-called revelations or new information has such an impact. See, at the ordinary level, your nervous system, your forefather's nervous system, ordinary people now, they take this information. If they say, if it's somebody who is a good Christian or Jew or Catholic or whatever, and they say, well, wait a minute, I may not agree with all the doctrines of the church, blah, blah, blah. They'll say, but the information, the heart of Islam, the heart of Christianity is extremely important, useful. Extraordinary information. I mean, it's changed my life trying to live by the tenets of this church or by this teaching, because information is not the kind of thing you do pick up in a fortune cookie. We're talking about serious information, of course, and they say it came from gods or it came to people that were in touch with the gods. The point being that the world is full of people who are not idiots, unless you're going to be a sorehead and say the world's full of idiots, and then you're going to have to change symphonies. And I got news for you. In this city, there is only one orchestra. So you can stand outside and piss against the wall. But they're still playing, and they play whatever they want to. You follow that? They're not idiots. The point is, the information coming from these religions, coming from these individuals, as history would have it, people say, and it's a fact at that level, they say this information, what they said, their words, are of supreme importance. But whatever it is, I know somebody's counted them that supposedly remembered the words of Jesus. I forget them, out to 200 or 300 or something, some small number. And they say, but look at the impact. It's had a bigger influence on this planet than anything, and all we have are just a few hundred words he said. And so they say this information is just astounding. It's just, we didn't know that until he came and said, God's told me to say so-and-so. I think what I'm telling you. It's not a matter so much that these people presented some new information. It's not so much that as it is that they made up some new information. And sure, we're not any longer addressing any ordinary minds. But if we were to an ordinary mind, I would still point out this in no way distracts from you and your ordinary minds view of what life is about and what importance this had. It's not to say that it had no impact. But what I'm going to further suggest to you, that given the choice between presenting new information, or revising even, to shave it a little bit, that they're revising older information, the idea of prophets coming along, in the Old Testament sense, and even in the other areas of the Middle East outside the biblical framework, if people come along and say, well, all right, my information that God's has spoken to me and given me visions and all sorts of things, and it's actually sort of a rebuilding, an expansion. I'm standing on the shoulders of giants who've gone before, as opposed to that Cairo about the guy you remember that decided he was staying on the shoulders of pygmies. He spoke for himself. But even the whole idea that the information is new, consider, if you got the possibility that it's new, and then what I'm telling you, that it's not new. It's not a revision of something old, and it's not something that, well, God told me. Just to make it simple, which I already did, just take the other possibility of it being information that's new that the gods gave him, or it's information that's a new version of some of the older ancient wisdom that the gods have told him, well, all right, let's bring it up to date. All that's under one. That, in other words, he's presenting the information was there. He got it somewhere, and he's bringing it forward to help humanity. As opposed to that, the other possibility, as much as I know you don't like to hear it, if you're ordinary, is that these guys made it up. And that's simple enough to say. Now, an ordinary nervous system has the way it is plugged into the flow of energy. It's supposed to what? Recoil like a cheap handgun. That it's not possible. It's just it's prima facie folly. That if indeed this information has the impact that you, that is me, just admitted that it has had, then it can't be on the basis that these guys just simply made it up and said, well, I've had a vision. Either that or I've fasted too long. Or that fall I took was worse than I made. I've had a vision. The guys have spoken to me. Or I have been off and I've been on a great quest and I have met with spiritual leaders here and there and great thinkers. And now I'm back and I've fasted and I've sat under a tree and I've laid down like Buddha and I floated down a river in a little cart. And I was born to a carpenter and hung around. I've done all that, and now the truth has been revealed to me. The mind recoils at the fact it can't make sense for me to point the possibility. And I'm not using the term they made it up simply for shock value. There is no other way to put it. I could have drug it out, but made it up. We already admitted we don't need more adjectives. We don't need conditions, modifiers. Made it up. That doesn't tell you much, but it tells a revolutionist more than the old stories about, well, I'm bringing forward the information, or I was given the information. I must tell you in all truthfulness, pshaw. Ask you one more time, since we have one, a few seconds. Consider. We danced back and forth here now for 15 minutes and made jokes and that. So you ought to be over. Of course, you're supposed to be over on your own. Of absolutely recalling, mechanical and sting there over the idea. But consider this kind of impact to this information that you can mark off history. You can mark off what they do. What am I saying? You can. Jesus. I'm further behind than that rat even noticed of those other cats in the alley. History is marked off. Any decent book of history that you can get from Kmart, it marks off these guys. And Confucius, and Buddha, Zoroaster, Moses, Muhammad, Jesus. It's marked off that what they did put shockwaves. And think about what they did. And forget about their behavior. The behavior was nothing, their actions. What it appears to be, and of course history says, the revelations, the word of God, or some enlightened word. Even historians who are not followers of any religion, those who apparently are more of a humanistic, as it's called, view, will admit they got no choice. They can't help it. They say, well, I'm not religious myself. Truth be known, I'm probably an upright, honorable agnostic. But I'm a historian, and I'm going to have to point out to you, they would say, that there is no doubt, probably the outstanding figure in history, or four or five of them, and they will name who I've just named and who you can name. They'll say, well, it has to be. It's got to be Moses and Jesus and Confucius and Buddha. And I don't believe in this stuff about them getting messages from God. And yet what they said had that kind of impact. I ask you again to consider, given a choice, all right, what they said. Let's just take, and that's a non-religious person. That's been said. I didn't make that up. It's been said from thousands of years. It coexisted with the kinds of support of, the contemporaneous support of these figures being religious men with revealed information. There was, at the same time, those who said, well, I don't believe that. But God, that's interesting to listen to. I want to take notes. I've never heard anybody talk like Confucius or Buddha. Now, I don't believe that crap that he's talking to God, but I want to hear the rest of that. Think of the other possibility. The impact, the only thing, remember where this started. Well, it started with a Kairos. It was his fault. That the old man addressed the assembled at the table and said, anything you really know, you made up. And his 30-year-old son said, well, in that case, I don't really know anything. And the old man said, no, I'm not surprised. Now, he's the one who started it, and I just picked up on it. But now, if you go from that at an individual level, that if there is something you really know, which some of you should be suspecting a trick already, anything you really know right now that's outside the ordinary, and only somebody who really knows something outside the ordinary really knows if they know it. So there you are. But if you do, just think about it. Now, you may have attributed it to hanging around this kind of activity. You may have attributed it one time to you read a book one time or just one sentence. But think about it. Did you really get it from somebody else? Did you really get it from a book? And I don't mean just, again, playing around with modifiers or trying to be pseudo-humble or even ersatz objective, like, well, perhaps I did add a bit of my own, or perhaps it was my own perception. Double pshaw. If you hear it in a certain way, it's got nothing to do with humility or the lack thereof. If there's something you really know, which let's assume all of you by now really know something, even if it's just one thing, if you're still hanging around this, you do know one thing extraordinary. I'm sure I'm not going to tell you what it is. But you do. Well, if I told you what it was, it'd muck it up. But you at least know one thing extraordinary. And without me saying it, most of you, let's stop me, and you'll suspect what I'm talking about. But now think about it. From the way I'm putting it, did you actually learn that from somebody? Is it your version of something? Now, you would never put it this way. Or did you make it up? Now, at first you might go, just use it, for instance, this doesn't literally have to be true, you might think, well, no, I heard that from you perhaps one night, or a Kairos. So, you know, and maybe I did interpret it, or maybe it did, I did take the significance, and in some way I applied it to me, and it just, you know, clicked. Yeah. Think about it in a certain way. If there's something you really know, I mean, the old man said it at the dinner table. Why would he lie there? He said, if there's anything you really know, you made it up. Well, enough of the beating around the bulrushes. All of this great information. And again, for the sake of the Cub Scout troop who was visiting here tonight, this is not literally true, little ones. It's not literally not true. And I'm sorry that they brought in little squirts like you at this time of night to where I had to back up and say this. To say that you made it up doesn't tell you anything other than the very thing that is driving the humans, whatever they call it. But what I'm saying is driving them to try and reach a point that you can actually, in some way, think individually. That this thing that everybody's trying to scratch, and most people in life just get through and they forget about it. They take a shower and have a drink. But that people get involved with stuff like this sometimes. This is what they're trying to do, is to get away from collective thinking. And they can say, well, I'm trying to get away from my poor background. I'm trying to get away from, I was brought up to be a strict Catholic, or I was an Orthodox Jew, and it drove me nuts living in the middle of Indianapolis, a place like that. You can say, and I'm trying to overcome my parochial view of social affairs. You can say anything you want to, but what you're actually trying to do is to think. Oh, I'll go ahead and put it crudely. Think for yourself. I shouldn't have said that, because almost everybody that's got a nose on this plant right now says, well, I do think for myself. Come out here and join the Cub Scouts. That is what they're trying to do. Someone who tries to follow some mystical system. Somebody that tries to literally be a good Jew or Christian. Jew in the religious sense, of course, and a Muslim, and a Christian in the religious sense also. That's too strange for even me to stop with. It's not really, but I was trying to cover it up so that Christians wouldn't go, that ain't funny. Of course, real Christians don't think much of anything's funny, do they? You're trying to get away from, if you're actually a would-be rebel, you're trying to get away from collective thinking. That's it. You're trying to get away from that pool, that possible reservoir, that pool of collective thinking that ignites everyone. That's where everybody started. Buddha's brain never would work. He could not go, or mama, until the collective pool of human thought ignited it. And there is no such thing as my right hand. I mean the collective pool. It's not actually there, but we've got to call it something, right? Call it the International House, the Squat Cakes. But the collective pool, that is what you're trying to get away from. So how are you going to get away from it? Now, ordinary people say, well, I'll leave town. You know, Kyrie's already covered that. Many people think if the gig was further from where I grew up, the pay would be better. The music would be more inspiring. So everybody grew up in Indianapolis and believes if Enron was alive today, she'd want to lay me. Or if Buddha was around today, if he was still alive, he'd go, I feel the need for some reason to go to Indianapolis. I believe there's someone who could help me. Everyone believes I've got to get away and I'll find something extraordinary. What are they trying to do? It's a harmless hobby. Why do people pack up and go to Tibet? Go to Nepal? Some people even go to Rio. But I don't personally think they're on that big of a mystical quest. I am not my brother's critic. I mean, they say they're down there, you know, laying on the beach there, and they say they're on a mystical quest. You know, who's to say? All of this represents one thing. All of you know that. It's the Bibles, the Hindu literature, everything, history, parables, fairy tales are filled with what? Don't say words. I could have said that. All of the stories, all of them. The exodus of the Jews. Buddha's wandering to find the truth. Confucius's travels to the political states investigating the system. All the fairy tales, Hansel and Gretel. What is it all about? It's always about somebody going somewhere. There's somebody that starts, once upon a time, a guy lived in such and such place. And one day he went, Mama, I'm going to leave. Jack and the Beanstalk. It's everybody. He gets up and goes. What does that represent? They're trying to get away from collective thinking. But what can the ordinary nervous system make out of it? I'm going to escape the captivity of the Egyptians and move to Brighton Beach. Follow me. What does all that represent? It represents the human nervous system trying to go away, trying to get away from collective thought. Now back to consider. Now that's just a fact. Many of you should see that without me having to preach anymore. That's what it represents, literally. What are you left with then? If you're ordinary and you do accept, all right, it may not be necessary that I actually go to Nepal. It may not be absolutely necessary that I recount the whole exodus of some race, the whole pursuit of some mystical teaching. Perhaps I can do it closer to home. How? Now that we have gone from accepting, I'll assume you have, that the idea of spatial travel, that I have got to get away from the confines, the limitations of my own thinking, my own environment. I need to go where secret knowledge or where superior knowledge lies, to India, to Finland. Don't ask me. So let us assume that in the last minute or so, that you have suddenly come to your senses, those of you that were saving up your money to go to the near Arctic regions, that now you can save yourself the big bucks and go, all right, I see what you mean. It is not a spatial matter. It is personal and it's intellectual. That it's really an internal journey. That I'm trying to get away from the collective thinking of humanity into something else. All right, I've got that. Now back to my question. Now what are you going to do? Now you could think, people have been through this before in their own way. You could think, well, now I am really onto something. Now I do not have to get out there and break my buns traveling all around the world because I see that what this is here. Uh-huh. For the third time, my question, well, what are you going to do now? Because what you're left with now is, all right, what I've got to do is I work on this. Now I can save my energy. I can save my money. I don't have to go travel somewhere. I can sit locally. Perhaps I'll find somebody to talk to. If not that, I damn sure can get a library card. And I'll consider, I'll read books, and I'll study, and I'll meditate. All right, a fourth time, what are you going to do? You are going to end up doing, if you're ordinary, what humanity normally would assume that all these great historical figures have done. Well, I will refine my thinking. I'll find what other people have thought. I will study. I will learn to read Farsi or whatever they were speaking, Indian, and I'll read Buddha's words in the original text. I will study and I will learn. I'll bring what he said up to date. I'll be able to get my own insightful fix on what he said. What are you talking about? And that sounds fairly insightful, I guess, in some quarters, at least probably around the Midwest. Because we've already established, you agreed 15 minutes ago, that if indeed such people as Buddha had something as astounding, well, they did because of its effect. I don't mean it was actually astounding, but its effect is astounding, according to them. We already decided, remember, that he made it up. So how now are you going to retrace, even internally, that same kind of course, and you're going to say, now I do not have to travel to India. I do not have to go. I see what you're saying. I do not now have to go and track down some obscure statue of Buddha and put my hand in a certain place and fast and stand on, you know, one foot. I see that the journey is the search of Buddha for enlightenment is an internal journey. Aha! So now I'll study his words and I'll re-travel and I'll get what he got. You're not listening. If he made it up, how are you going to re-travel it by going, aha, well, I'll take what he made up and I'll turn it into even a higher level of metaphorical significance. I mean, the world has already taken what he made up. This is not what you would say, of course. They've already taken what he made up, and they put ornaments. They put new interpretations. They recocoed the thing almost to death. Not to death. They made it much more intriguing. If he said 2,000 words, I know he said a lot more, they say, than. Anyway, if he said 2,000 words, now imagine if what he said fit there, now you got whole libraries of interpretations over what he said. Now I'll bypass that, I'll do it myself. If he made it up, if the information was made up to start with, and it's why it was so significant. It's why he really knew something, because he made it up. But now you're going to say, all right, I will re-travel this route. I will, as it were, I will relive the life, the search, the understanding, the subsequent and ultimate enlightenment of the fat man. And I too will be a Buddha. I will know what he knew. If you know what he knew, it's not possible. If he made it up, he made it up. Whatever you can make of it now, do you understand? It's some interpretation. Let's tape out. Well, well, I guess it's probably as good a place to stop as any, isn't it? And the little Boy Scouts one.
That concludes this talk. Be sure to visit us at jancox.com, where you can search through 3,000 talks for topics of interest or just leave us a message.